Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem Shalom Bayis Shir number 526. We talked about in the previous Shiurim, Tversky brought down a couple of Sheva Brachas and the lessons from it. Shakal Bara Lechvaydai, to have in mind HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor, and Yetzer HaAdam. Adam is about being a human being that gives over of themselves to be selfless, to be not selfish, and very few people grasp the depth of these concepts and have difficulty internalizing it, because for most young couples, the fantasy of marriage is more likely to be that the other one will make them whole by providing all of their emotional needs. He says names here. Esther thinks that Shmuel will be the answer to her prayers, and Shmuel thinks the same of Esther. And not long after the wedding, they make a startled discovery that the husband's a fine guy, but not like she assumed, that he's dedicated to fulfill her needs. He's more interested that his wife fulfills his needs. And it's a wonderful dream that she had and that he had, and a pleasant fantasy that just has been shattered. She feels some disappointment and even a touch of anger at her husband for bursting her fantasy balloon. And Shmuel, the husband, feels the same way, anger at her for not living up to his fantasy. He wants to make her live up to his fantasy, and she wants him to live up to her fantasy. And that's what he calls the seeds of a power struggle. Who is going to make the other one to fulfill their needs? This may not lead to serious disagreement. It may not cause World War III. But the husband, as an example, discovering that although his wife is a fine person, she still falls short of fulfilling the fantasy of having all his needs satisfied. And so the problem is he, in turn, will do other things to make himself feel fulfilled. He may stay in this office longer. He may spend more hours on his computer. He may spend more time with his friends. He may read more newspapers and do other things. And his wife may seek to do his own things, this avoidance aspect. This avoidance maneuver leads to diluting intimacy. This distancing continues. It may continue without any drama right now, but it'll be the seed of a terrible disagreements and rifts that will happen later. So the idea is like this. When a husband and wife feels that their needs are not being fulfilled, they do experience anxiety. They don't know why they feel that way. It's sort of like an infant having that feeling of anxiety. And their love for each other may be affected by this anxiety. This anxiety is like a fear. The husband and wife may actually develop a low-key fear of each other. They may avoid each other because closeness generates a discomfort of fear. And they'll experience discomfort, and they won't understand why they're experiencing this. And what happens is, over time, minor defects become major problems. Molehills become mountains. And all this could have been prevented. All this could have been prevented if young men and young women remove themselves, divest themselves of unrealistic or unreasonable expectations. Very often, marriages, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be idealistic. Remember that. Doesn't mean that you're cynical about marriage. Chas v'shalom. It's a beautiful thing. And there's room for a tremendous amount of beauty, closeness, growth, excitement, wonder. All of these things are true. But it's based on the premise that they have realistic expectations of one another. And it's more about growing together and each one doing their best to be the best they can be. And together, if the other one shares that same vision, they could have a beautiful, beautiful marriage. But the unrealistic expectations and unreasonable expectations create all this agmas nefesh that we just described before. Every young man, every young woman is entitled to a happy marriage. But what does happiness mean? So he says something interesting, Rabbi Twersky, that the pursuit of happiness, it says, and the Founding Fathers put it in, they wisely wrote the pursuit of happiness. That's an inalienable human right. They did not write pursuit of pleasure. Happiness, they did not equate with pleasure. Modern society equates happiness with pleasure. Even in our frum circles, many young men, many young women in all cultures feel that if they lack a pleasure that they desire, they may feel unhappy, and that's unhappiness. And happiness is when they have the pleasures of having all their needs filled and experiencing pleasures. And that is the mistake. You could be happy even while experiencing difficulties. You could be happy when you delay pleasure. And then when you actually experience pleasure at the right time, you'll be happy there too. True happiness comes from fulfilling one's potential. That's really the truth. One is at peace with themselves, shalom with themselves, then he's shalem. Shalom and shalem have the same root. Shalom means peace, shalem means whole, and they are the same root. The only way to be at peace with oneself, to have shalom with oneself, is to be shalem, to be whole. Sham Shafal Hirsch points out that the word sameach, joyful, is closely related to the word tsameach, growth, because growth leads to happiness. A person that may not have so much potential, they may coast, they may not accomplish much, but a person with greater potential and they don't utilize it to its fullest will feel uncomfortable because they're not fulfilling their potential. Everyone, according to their capacity, needs to grow. Personality growth requires effort. One does not become a better person by doing nothing. You could be born with wonderful midos, but if you don't work on yourself, you are doing nothing. You will not become a better person. Marriage can result in true happiness. Why? Because they make each other shalim. They make each other whole. Even Ezer Kenegdai, helper opposite him. Opposite means different, precisely because the husband and wife have differences and make the effort to adjust to one another. That's where there's growth. If the husband and wife would be exactly the same, there would be no need to change, no need for growing. So without the kenegdai, there's no ezer. There's no marriage. Personal growth means that one is a mensch as best as possible, and they grow, and they give, and they do their best to fulfill the other person's needs. You have a right to your needs, and you have a right to express them. We talked that many, many times. But the primary focus is for each other and to grow. So the differences with each other, the awareness that you have to make adjustments to accommodate, if you recognize this and you train yourself, and if we had this training going from ninth grade on, to recognize that this is part of life and part of a marriage that's to be, it would create a removal from a tremendous amount of disappointment and anger that takes place in marriage. And it would instead be replaced by a gratitude and an appreciation for opportunity to grow, to become whole, and to achieve a true simcha. Part of this avoida, by the way, is to learn how to remove yourself from stress by handling stress better. Because some stress is actually very good. You know, when stress is excessive, it becomes a distress and is destructive. It affects a person negatively, physically and emotionally. That level of stress is not healthy. People who suffered severe trauma, and then afterwards they have post-traumatic stress disorders, known as PTSD. And this needs therapy, and this needs, you know, real serious intervention. You know, people go through certain trauma and they have to learn how to get past it. This is not a simple thing often. But the idea being, though, is that we need to handle regular stressful situations in a better way. In a better way. He says something interesting in an anecdote, but I think Rabbi Twersky is talking about an incident that happened to himself, if I'm not mistaken. But here's the story that he had. When my son became bar mitzvah, many relatives came for the simcha, and my wife cooked gefilte fish in advance, sealed it in jars, and because we were short on refrigerator space, I stored the jars in the shul refrigerator, intending to bring them home Erev Shabbos. When we returned from Friday night, shul Friday night, my wife asked, where did you put the gefilte fish? And had I been hit by a bat, I couldn't have been more shocked or crushed. I had forgotten to bring the gefilte fish home, and there was no Erev, and there were 30 guests for the Shabbos Friday night meal. No gefilte fish. Imagine how the hurt and bewilderment on my wife's face. Imagine yourself in my predicament, and you may know what it felt like. But that son is now that son that we made a bar mitzvah for, Baruch Hashem, has grandchildren, and the absence of the gefilte fish at Friday night meal was not a calamity I'd envisioned it to be. Sometimes when I think I'm in a very difficult predicament, it helps to remember that a few things can be as aggravating as not having gefilte fish to serve for the guests, but it really had no lasting impact on my life. The same applies to these rules in life. The general rule is, with stress, don't react to it as a catastrophe. It'll fade, most of them, 98% of those incidents will fade into relative insignificance. It's hard, but we have to work on it to keep ourselves level-headed and do whatever we can to cope optimally in the current situation that we have. And in this sense, a husband and wife could be tremendous support for one another. For example, a husband comes home from work all nervous and tense because there was a lucrative, profitable contract that he was working on that was given to a competitor. He lost the contract. An ego blow and a financial loss and an insult, and it was distressing. Or a wife, the wife here, what she can do, she doesn't have that ego point, and she could comfort her husband and reassure her husband. You tried your best, you gave it all you got. Perhaps that guy underbid you, perhaps he used some pull. I'm proud of you for trying. The great baseball player gets a 300 average, he's worth millions of dollars. You're doing great. And the same applies the other way around. When the wife is stressed or crushed by some disappointment, the husband could give similar encouragement to her. So he quotes two of his books, one of them called It's Not As Tough As You Think, and another one called It's Not As Tough At Home As You Think. And he cites there numerous examples of incidents that were experienced at the time as calamities. But when they occurred, they were like viewed as such, but they shrank into insignificance with the passage of time. Unfortunately, though, and we have to be careful about this, many husbands and wives react excessively to a stressful incident. But if we could keep our cool, we can diffuse the situation, and, like a year from now, we'll be laughing at this, so let's start laughing now. So that's basically the concept behind this. So again, to just summarize the few aspects of this shiur, is to remove the unhealthy fantasies of what one envisions marriage should be like. It's not just newlyweds that feel this way. Maybe, people marry 20 years, they get disillusioned, and they think, of some fantasies that they could have had in their life and they didn't. And all this is destructive. All this is atasei tzahara. We have to really work on the bechina of koil, like Yaakov said, yeshli koil, to bring that happiness of being happy with our lot and internalizing it and remove ourselves from the unrealistic expectations and to strive for personal growth and to learn how to react to stress in a more healthy way. And that will bring our marriages to a much better place. Bracha v'atzlacha.